Yeah, hi everyone, I'm Nick, I'm an addict. Really nice to be here and great to see some familiar faces and some new faces. And it's nice to be here. So thanks for asking me, Matt. And thanks for all the committee, for all your hard work in putting this event on. And do you know what? I think I just want to start with a bit of gratitude. A bit of gratitude for Cocaine Anonymous and for the life it's given me today. My life, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Cocaine Anonymous, you know. It's absolutely transformed my life. I'm really grateful for that. I'm really grateful for the day I've had today. I've had a normal day. You know, I haven't had to borrow, I haven't had to lie, I haven't had to steal, I haven't had to manipulate anybody. You know, I've been to work, I've paid the lads, I've come here, and do you know what? Life's all right. Life's just all right. You know, I'm full of gratitude for that, and I'm really grateful to understand what I suffer with today. You know, I understand that I suffer with an illness that centres in my mind. You know, and it affects my thinking on a daily basis, and it can still do it today. But if I look in hindsight, you know, I realise that I've suffered with this illness all my life. You know, as a kid, you know, I really suffered, like, real low self-esteem. You know, and I would always listen to the lies in my head that I wasn't good enough and that I didn't fit in, when in hindsight I did. You know, I was all right, I was a normal lad, but my head wouldn't let me believe that. And I used to struggle at school. You know, I didn't feel like I fit in at school. And like, I remember my introduction to drugs, and it was cannabis. You know, someone offered me a joint at school, and what I've also learned is that I can't say no. You know, no doesn't come into my vocabulary, and someone offered me a joint and I took it. And I smoked this joint with the lads, and yeah, first thing that happened was I pulled a whitey, I puked, and I ran home with my tail between my legs. And most normal people would have probably gone, do you know what? I'm not going to do that again. You know, but my head goes, you've got to get really good at that. So I started practicing smoking a bit of weed, and I started buying a little bit of weed, and before I know it, I really liked the effects produced by cannabis. It shut this up. You know, I got a bit of peace from my mind. And I was able to laugh. I was able to joke. I was able to fit in with all the other lads at school. And, you know, it became in every part of my day. You know, smoking weed on the way to school, on the way home from school. And, it ended up me being kicked out from school at an early age. And, yeah, I didn't really know what to do. Like, my family were ready to disown me already. And I went out looking for a job, and I found this little job as an apprentice painter and decorator, and I got myself a little moped. My head wants to tell you motorbike, but I've got to be honest, it was a moped. And I'd go off to work and, you know, do my thing, smoking my weed. And I remember one morning, I'd had my joint on the way to work and I wasn't concentrating. And I had a near fatal accident. You know, a car pulled out in front of me. I've swerved to miss this car, and I had a head-on collision with a bus. And in the book, it talks about ominous warnings that we fail to heed. And that was my first one. You know, I was catapulted off this bike and I landed straight in a graveyard. You know, and I almost died. But I was taken to hospital and I believe I was saved by God. And I remember the doctors talking to my parents. You know, they were saying that we can tell Nick's been smoking weed. His heart's irregular. You know, and all my parents are like, look, you've got to sort this out. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to stop. That's it, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I remember coming home and all my mates have come round to see me. And the first thing they do is they bring out a joint. And like, again, I can't say no. So I start smoking weed again, and it was different. There was something not quite the same. You know, it wasn't giving me that sense of ease and comfort that we talk about in the book. You know, paranoia became a constant thing, anxiety. But I couldn't put it down. I could not put this drug down because I was so worried about what people would think of me. And I quickly started looking, well, I now realise I swapped it for something else. You know, I swapped one for another, and that's when I found the pub and I found alcohol. And I remember I used to love drinking. I loved the pub. I used to look up to all these guys in the pub, like my boss at the time. Like, we'd be at work and he'd be on the phone to his missus, and we'd be coming over about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he'd be like, yeah, it's going to be a late one tonight, love. Probably won't be home till about 9. I used to think, wow, this guy's cool. I want to be just like him. And that's what I ended up doing. You know, I ended up being down the pub all the time. You know, I used to obsess about getting to the pub each night. And one night I'm down the pub, and My mate gives me this rolled up £20 note. And I was like, that's Andy, I'm skint. And I remember walking up to the bar and I bought myself a drink. And he said, no, you idiot. He said, go out to the transit outside. So I head out to this transit and there's a white line on the diary. And again, no does not come into my vocabulary. And I do this white line and I walk back into the pub like I'm 10 foot tall. Like I own the place. Not a care in the world. I'm here, there, and everywhere. I'm chatting to him, I'm chatting to her, I'm chatting up the barmaid, which was something I'd never really done before. You know, I could talk to women. Like, this is amazing. You know, I have arrived. You know, that was my experience. And it wasn't long before I met my first girlfriend, serious girlfriend. And 10 days before my 21st birthday, my first son was born. And like, that was it. You know, I made a declaration that I was going to give up drinking and drugs and I was going to be the perfect dad and I was going to supply for my family and look after everyone. You know, and I'd done all right, a couple of months, you know, but the lies, the deceit, the manipulation, it all started creeping in. You know, I'd lie. I'm just going to go to the pub for one. I'd listen to my head. I've never had one in my life, you know, and I'd come home 9, 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes the next day, she'd be like, where have you been? You know, and fair enough, she wouldn't put up with it. And she asked me to leave. And, you know, I blamed her. You know, I'm hardworking. I deserve a drink after work. All that gear. And, yeah, I used it. I used on it time and time again. You know, that resentment. And she could see it was getting bad. And she actually asked me to come home. And she said, look, if you sort yourself out, you can come home. And I went home for a little bit and... same thing, you know, I sorted myself out for a little bit, I'd listen to the lies, and off I'd go again. You know, I'm just going to have a couple of beers, I deserve it. And I'd come home smashed again. And she actually met someone else. And that was really hard, because I didn't understand. You know, I still blamed everybody else, and I used that as my excuse. You know, if what happened to you, you were drinking and used like me, and I just catapulted me into more and more drinking and using, and... it got to a point where I realised that I had a bit of a problem, you know, and I realised that I wanted to cut down and I wanted to manage my drinking and using. And I'd do things like, I'd go to the gym. You know, that was a big one for me. I'd sign up at the gym, me and my mate, and we found this gym that had a bar, which was quite handy. And we'd go down to the gym and like, I'm thinking all of a sudden, you know, I'm not quite getting big enough, I'm not happy with how I look. So all of a sudden, I'm using steroids. And... then I can't deal with the mood swings, so then I'm drinking. Then I can't deal with that, so I'm using gear again. And if you've ever met anyone who's using cocaine, alcohol, and steroids, and a pretty picture, I was an angry little man. I caused a lot of problems. I caused a lot of arguments. And, yeah, it weren't great. Life was really, really unmanageable, and I was still looking for things to fix me. And I remember getting in this relationship with this girl who, she had loads of money. And I thought, oh, this is it. I'm set. She loved the drink, and we would race home to see who could get home first, and we'd start drinking. And to be honest, I needed the gear to keep up with her drinking. She was nuts. And I thought, this is it. I'm sorted. She used to take me on these amazing holidays. But I remember lying on the beach, you know, on these amazing holidays, thinking, is this it? Why am I still not happy? Look at all this around me, and I still can't be happy. So I knew still something wasn't right. And before I know it, this relationship got quite toxic. It started verbally, and then it got physically, you know, quite demanding, and it was rough, really rough, both ways. And we didn't know who would wake up in a police cell. One morning it would be her, another morning it would be me. And I remember being in a police cell one day thinking to myself, that's it. You know, I've got to stop this. I can't do this anymore, because I'm going to end up in prison. And I remember saying to myself, that's it, I'm done. And I swore to myself in that police cell that I was never going to drink and use again. And I was released on bail. And I walk out of the police station onto this little roundabout. And as I'm stood there, one of my mates drives past and he goes, what's happened? I said, oh, I got nicked last night, didn't I? He said, what happened, mate? And I can't be honest. I can't tell him what happened. So I tell him I got in a fight in town. He said, oh, I'll be all right, don't worry about it. We're going to have a beer. And I go and have a beer and I'm off and running again. And this went round and round and round for a long time. You know, I'd come home and my parents would be like, what's wrong with you? You know, there'd be loads of family interventions. I'd like drive home and there'd be cars on the drive, my sisters, my mums, my dads, and I'd be like, here we go again. And I'd promise them, I'm going to sort myself out. They'd bail me out. I'd be like, that's it. I'm going to sort myself out now. And it never happened. Because I'd always listened to that lie. I didn't know that I had a head that lied to me. I'm always going to go for one. And I'd have one. And I know now that the phenomenon of craving would become apparent. And I wanted to stop, but I didn't know how to. And I remember reaching out to my parents, asking for help. And they tried. You know, they tried their best. And we went to doctors. And the doctors gave me antidepressants because they told me that I was depressed. And I just carried on drinking on them. We went to psychiatrists, you know, who told me that I should try some controlled drinking, you know, that I should get a hobby. And one of them actually said that I should go home and paint my bedroom. And I'm like, I'm a painter and decorator. Do you know what I mean? So none of these things worked. You know, I remember going home once and living with my dad, and my dad's controlling my money. He's giving me money to go out because I can't manage my own life. And he said, right, we're going to do this controlled drinking that the psychiatrist spoke about. I'm like, yeah, right, Dad, let's do it. And he'd be like, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a tenner tonight to go down the pub, yeah? Come home tomorrow, yeah? And you can have a day off it. Yeah, all right, Dad. So off I trot. I'm off down the B&C, my local, walk in there because I'm all important, yeah? I'll go in there with my tenner and I'll order myself a pint of Stella. And I have a look around. I'm like, all my mates are there and the lads are there and I'm thinking, this is going to be all right. Anyone get any gear tonight? Fuck's sake, next Tuesday night. Behave yourself. All right, mate. All right, sorry. Get me fiver out. I order my next pint of Stella. And I'm thinking, well, I ain't got no money left now. The craving's on me. Anyone getting any gear tonight? Oh, can you get it, mate? Yeah, I can get it. No worries. Before I know it, I've got four or five guys giving me 40 quid. I've got a couple of hundred quid. I go and buy an eighth. I divvy it up. I'm having a line out of his. I divvy it out. I've got a bit for myself and another 40 quid in my pocket and I'm off to the next pub. Yeah? 5 o'clock in the morning, I walk through the front door. My dad's there and he goes, I thought you were going out for two beers. That's my experience when I try controlled drinking. You know, I will go to any lengths to that phenomenon of craving. You know, I can't stop. And it went round and round and round and I'm getting worse and worse and worse. I can't look at myself in the mirror. I'm crying into the mirror. What is wrong with you? Why can't you stop? My parents are like, what is wrong with you? Why can't you stop? Why can't you live normally? And I'm just like, I don't know. And I remember being in a pub one night, walking home, and I rang my mum and I said, look, I don't know what to do. I can't live like this anymore. And she said, okay, leave it with me. And I remember she phoned me back the next day and she said, I got you a place in a treatment centre. Got you a place in rehab. I went, fucking hell, mum, I ain't that bad. And she went, no, I really think you need to go. So I agreed. I said, when do I go? She goes, you got a week. I thought, that's handy. So I had a week of lying, stealing, borrowing, doing whatever I had to do, you know, to get through that week. And I remember walking into that treatment centre, just a scared little boy, not knowing what to expect and not knowing what to do. And to be honest, I got involved. I was probably the model student. I went to all the meetings. I saw all you guys happy, and I thought they got to still be drinking. I didn't think any of you were telling the truth. I didn't trust anybody, but I went about my business and I did everything that was suggested in rehab. And I left there quite confident, thinking that I knew it all. And I remember leaving treatment after 28 days and my best mate comes to pick me up and he said, should we go down the pub? Oh yeah, that's a good idea. So we went down the pub and I proceeded to tell everyone that I had a solution for all of them. I sat there drinking my non-alcoholic beer, thinking that I was fixed. And as you can imagine, it didn't last very long. You know, I think I was about 60 days, and even though I had to be medically detoxed off alcohol, I couldn't admit alcohol was my problem. I thought it was just cocaine. I didn't think myself an alcoholic. And I listened to that lie one last time. And I picked up a drink. And I had two. And I walked home. And I went, maybe you're all right. So the experiment went so well, I went back the next day to try again. And I had four pints. And then the next day I went back, I think I had about 7 or 8. And I picked up a bag of gear and I was off and running. And that relapse lasted about 6 months. But you lot would not leave me alone. You kept ringing me. What are you up to? When you come into a meeting, really messes up your using, I'm telling you. And I remember being in a pub one day, and I think I had about 4 pints. And I had no money left. I was in debt up to my eyeballs. My family were literally on the they'd thrown me out. They were on the verge of disowning me. No one was answering the phone to me. And I felt something just snapped inside of me, right here. And I was like, I'm done. I'm absolutely done with this way of life. And I remember ringing a guy who was trying to help me, and I said, look, what do I have to do to stay clean and sober? And he said, come to my house tomorrow, you big blue book, and that's what I did. We opened that book and we embarked on a journey together. You know, he outlined the problem for me in step one, the allergy of the body, the spiritual malady and the obsession of the mind. It all made perfect sense. You know, he outlined that lie to me, you know, that my mind would constantly lie that I'm only going to have that one, that obsession. I'd wake up in the morning, I'm not going to drink today. Today's the day I'm not going to drink. And then by 10 o'clock, I'm thinking, I'll probably pop to the pub and just have a Coke. And by 1 o'clock, I'm thinking, yeah, I'll go and see the lads. And then I'll just have one. There it is, the lie. I'm just going to have that one. And he spoke about the allergy, the phenomenon of craving. Once I put a substance inside of me, it kicks off that phenomenon of craving. I don't know. No one knows when I'm going to stop. You know, and it all made perfect sense. He spoke about spiritual malady, that internal gear. You know, irritable, restless, discontent, bored, pissed off, ungrateful. That's my natural being. You know, and I have to do something to fulfill that. And it all made perfect sense for me. So step one, I was like, yeah, I get that. I really do get that. And at step one, he outlined a solution. He said, look, your solution to your problem is God. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I don't believe in God. He said, okay, no worries. He said, let's take it back a little bit. He said, can you stop the wind from blowing? I was like, no. Can you stop the sun from setting? I was like, no. He said, can you stop the waves crashing in on the beach? I said, no. He said, they're all powers greater than yourself. And that's where it started for me. Nature, powers of nature, powers of the universe. And that's where it started. And I made a decision then. So we went and done my step three prayer at Guildford Cathedral. And, you know, I made a decision there that I wanted to live in the solution and not the problem. Yeah, step three. It talks about it. If it's honestly and humbly made, an honest impact is felt at once. And that was my experience. I believe that's where God entered my life. You know, we walked out of the cathedral and he said to me, he said, look, a really important word for me in recovery is whatever. Whatever happens, happens. Whatever will be, will be. And I was like, okay, cool. And it didn't really mean much to me, but I was getting the train home and I put my headphones on. And the first song that came on was Whatever by Oasis. And it talks in that song, we're free. We're free to be whatever we want to be. And I knew from that moment on that I had a power working in my life. And it gave me the courage to go on with the rest of the program. You know, it gave me the courage to write that step four, to get everything down on there. And I went to him with it. And I remember walking up to him going, oh, I'm not going to tell him that. I'm just going to keep that to myself. And I remember telling him that big one at the top. It just came out. He said, I've done that. I was like, you're joking. He said, no, I've done that. And I went through this step four of him. And it highlighted so many things that I didn't know. Basically, all my problems were my own making. That was a bit of a shock. But a lot of people talk about step four, having that experience and being set free and being light and fluffy. And, you know, that wasn't my experience. You know, I went through that step four and it left me absolutely exhausted. It left me absolutely empty. And it took me a few days to get over it. But when I did get over it, you know, I was ready to go on the rest of the program and I was ready to accept what God had to offer into my life. You know, and he gave me a list of my character defects. And a lot of my recovery today is based in steps 6 and 7. You know, they're really important steps for me where I look at my defects of character. You know, I understand that my thinking is still twisted. You know, I can't keep buying into these lies in my thinking all the time. If I do, my character defects run wild. You know, I have to look at the principles behind steps 6 and 7, willingness and humility. I have to be willing to grow in my sobriety. I have to be humble. You know, I have to practice humility. And humility for me is honestly accepting myself for who I am today. You know, I'm no better, I'm no worse than anyone else. And if I'm able to do that, I don't look to change the way I feel. You know, I don't always get it right, but I try, you know, and I'm willing to learn. And then 8 and 9, you know, we made a list of all these amends that I had to make, and I had a lot. I used to think I run my own business, but in fact, I was just a thief of a paintbrush. You know, I would turn up at these jobs, I would quote your job, I'd take your deposit, and you'd never see me again. You know, and I had a lot of financial amends to make, but I went out and did them. I rang these people and I went to them. You know, I said, look, I haven't got much, but can we set up a payment plan? And that's what I did. It took a long time, but I paid them all off. I went to one guy who lives down my road, and I damaged his car, and I remember knocking on his door, and I knocked on his door, and I said, look, I said, I'm really sorry, but I need to speak to you. I'm here to make an amends for damaging your car. He went, oh, that was you, was it? I was like, yeah, unfortunately. He said, wait there. And I was like, oh, shit. He's going to ring the old bill or something. And he was gone for a couple of minutes, and he come back, and he said, what you've done has just made my day. He said, I really appreciate you coming round, and I want you to do one thing for me. I said, yeah, absolutely. And he gave me a Bible. And he highlighted a few chapters that he wanted me to read, you know, and I did that. You know, and that was my amends to him, and they really helped me in that time. You know, it was a power greater than myself talking through someone else. You know, and I see him now and again, and we have a great chat. And, you know, I'm a member of society today, thanks to that. My amends took a long time. I'm still going through them now, you know, especially with my children. They're ongoing amends. But yeah, the amends process for me was amazing. It was just another highlight of God working in my life. And step 10, it's a daily thing for me. You know, I have to make sure that I don't harm anyone else. I have to make sure I don't harm myself, because I'm very good at that. But I look at myself on a daily basis. And then step 11, it's a big one for me. You know, we sought God through prayer and meditation, and I've taken it to real extremes. I was 18 months stark raving sober. And I was in a relationship at the time with this girl, and this poor girl, I kidnapped her and took her to Rome, because I was convinced that I was going to find God in Rome. And I booked this trip to the Vatican, because that's where I believe I'm going to find God. And I'm not hurrying her along. Come on, we've got to go down to the Vatican. We're going to the Vatican today. I'm so excited. And I remember walking around the Vatican, and we get to the Sistine Chapel, and I'm looking at all these amazing paintings that Michelangelo had done, and I'm there in awe, and I'm thinking, right, this is it. This is the moment. I'm going to meet God. And guess what? Nothing happened. I remember walking out of the Vatican going, shit, what am I going to do now? And we walked back into Rome, and she said, look, I'm really thirsty. I said, yeah, let's go and get a drink. And she was there with her glass of Prosecco. I'm there with my coffee. And there's a couple next to us, and I start chatting to them. And this guy took a real interest in what I was saying, and for some reason I told him why I was in Rome and that I'd come to find God. And he said, that's really interesting. I thought, you must think I'm nuts. And he said, I'm 14 years sober in AA. I said, no way. He said, yeah. He said, I'm a chaplain for the US Navy. And I was like, wow. And we got chatting. He said, look, he said, I admire what you're doing. He said, but you're looking in all the wrong places. He said, God's within here. And I went all the way to Rome, and I found God. He was with me all along, you know, and I'm connected to that God today. You know, I don't listen to my head, I listen to my heart. And these little experiences that continue to happen in my recovery just reaffirm that God's working in my life. Step 12, it's a beautiful experience. You know, I love working with other men, helping them through the book, you know, seeing them change their lives around. Step 12, it's all about practicing those principles. You know, it talks about practicing the spiritual principles that we learn. And, you know, if I'm in those principles, I'm working each step, each and every day. And as a result of going through the steps, 5.5 years clean and sober, my life is unreal. You know, I have to pinch myself sometimes to believe it. You know, it's nothing short of a miracle. You know, I've got my kids back in my life today. You know, 16 and 18 now. And they ring me every day. You know, I've finally forgiven myself for what I've put them through as well. And that's been a massive thing. You know, I finally realized when I was talking to them one day that I don't feel guilty anymore. You know, I'm free from that stuff. And I like to think they look up to me. We have a great relationship. We go to football. We go to the motorbike racing. You know, my mum, she's got her life back. She's got her freedom back. She's got her own recovery program. She's in Al-Anon. And she's GSR for her meeting. She loves that. She looks 10 years younger herself. And the whole family unit has recovered as a result of me coming into recovery and working the 12 steps. You know, and what do I do today? I do exactly what I did when I came in. I get up in the morning, I pray. I invite God into my life. I meditate. I write a gratitude list. I speak to other addicts constantly throughout the day. You know, I check my thinking. I'm accountable to a sponsor. You know, and for me, like, talking to other addicts is massive. You know, I find that if I'm not talking to other people, I get disconnected and I find that God can't reach me sometimes. You know, I find that God talks to me through other people, and reaching out to others is a massive part of my recovery because I can't do this on my own. But with you guys, I can. And I think the biggest thing I've got with recovery is peace of mind. And I'm actually all right with me today. I'm comfortable with who I am. I look in the mirror and I don't often think, what is wrong with you? I think to myself, do you know what? You're doing all right. You're doing the best you can. You know, I've just bought my first house, which is nothing short of a miracle. And miracles continue to happen in my life. But I'm in no illusion that if I put this stuff down, that it could easily go back to where it was. So I'm a very happy customer of CA. I hope someone got something from that. And I'm really grateful to be here, and I think I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Nick.